Hello and welcome to Open Source's Guelph Beat, a shorter Open Sources that's just the Guelph parts. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Scotty Hertz and I set ourselves the goal earlier this year to host every member of City Council on Open Sources for a half-hour chat, and in the final part of these recaps, for now anyway, we talked to Mark McKinnon, City Councilor for Ward 6. McKinnon is a first-term councilor who comes from a real estate background, and when he isn't moving houses, he's publishing board games. How do these two things go together? Well, we asked him about that, naturally. But in City Matters, we asked McKinnon about the still contentious issue regarding the Nisqually Bridge decision. The case was closed last December, or it was supposed to be, but listeners that live in the area are still sore about council and how they went against the vast majority of people who came out to speak against the bridge and approved it anyway. In other issues, we talked to McKinnon about the ward boundary review and study to examine Guelph's council's composition and employment status. That never happened. And along with that, we also discussed the status of downtown redevelopment and whether or not McKinnon will try pushing for our service review again during the coming budget deliberations. We also talked about how people characterize the new developments in the South End as cookie cutter and whether or not that's a fair assessment. So let's catch up with Mark McKinnon, who was our guest on Open Sources Guelph back on July 14th.
As we're trying to do, we're trying to have every member of Guelph City Council in to have a nice chat. And I think we've had all nice chats so far. And so I want to welcome Mark McKinnon, Ward 6 Councillor. We're welcome you back to CFRU, aren't we?
Thanks very much. It's been a very long time.
So, yeah, nobody who's around now remembers you. But you were saying during the break that you have experience being a producer and...
Well, back in 1991, I was involved with a show for a little while, but not something I did extensively at that point.
You were a chemistry student, so you didn't have a lot of free time, I take it.
That's right. This was going way outside my science box out here.
Yeah. Before we kind of get into political stuff, I wanted to mention this because I find it interesting. You are in real estate. That's your main sort of business concern. But you also do board game publishing.
That's right. Yeah, so I'm a real estate broker and a mortgage broker, but I also publish board games, Descami Publishing, as well as a game designer. And in addition, I'm involved with a group that's going to be opening up the Boardroom Guelph, which is a downtown board game cafe opening up in a couple weeks next to the works on Wyndham Street. So that's pretty exciting. So it's a number of different jobs. And, of course, council is where it takes a lot of evenings doing that work.
not a lot of time for board games.
As a bit of an aside, favorite board game that you didn't design?
Oh, definitely Agricola.
Agricola?
Yeah, it's a really hardcore farming game, which sounds a little bizarre, but it's...
perfect for this place. Yeah.
It's really tight. It's very strategic. A lot of interaction between the players. I just love it.
Were they still, like the nerd guys, were they still hanging out down the hall when you were here? Like, did you start that?
You know, I was part of the games club way back in the 91 2000, I guess. But no, I didn't see them as I came by.
You should come back when school's in because it's expanded.
It's
whole floor.
But it's mostly laptop stuff now. I don't know how big you are into the online gaming.
Not at all. My kids run circles around you with that. I'm a hardcore, regular tabletop board gamer.
No random Pokemon thing.
What? Oh, don't.
We'll talk about that next week.
Yeah. We'll postpone that till next week. I wanted to mention, first of all, because I remember interviewing your predecessor, Todd Dennis, and one of the things he mentioned was he didn't like the term cookie cutter community. And that was a term a lot of people associate with your ward. I mean, because there's a lot of quick development down there, a lot of turnover. Houses kind of seem to spring up overnight. And I'm wondering your feeling on it in terms of how people feel about your ward in particular, the Deep South.
You guys have their own flag, right?
He has it on his blog.
Yeah,
it's a legit
term. No, I know. It's hilarious.
In terms of that feeling that it's... I don't know if it, when people say cookie cutter, it almost sounds cheap, right?
Right. And the Deep South, as we call it, certainly, I've been there for 13, 14 years as a homeowner there. And I love it. I think it's the best place in the city. It has the newest infrastructure. It has some great commercial establishments at the Node at Clare and Gordon. And a lot of really good advantages. The housing style is very modern, up to today's building standards. So it's great for that. Now, of course, it is a subdivision community. It's designed to be more uniform and less individualistic the way some of the older neighborhoods would be. So that is part of the I'd say in some way the charm of it is that you're going to have a uniformity. You're going to live next to people that houses that look similar enough to yours. And, of course, being in real estate, I know that there's certain advantages to that as well. But I know that there's a lot of communities that live in the South End. There's a lot of us that maybe aren't as engaged in the community, whether it's cultural language or the fact that, you know, if you have kids and you have a lot of young families in the South End that, you know, you finish work and then you're off to this event with the kids and then you're off to a different event with the kids. So you don't have as much time perhaps to interact the way a more established community would be.
Right.
But that's the nature of what it is. We do have a very low voting record in the South End for municipal politics. And I think that's part of it because people aren't quite as engaged in the community perhaps.
I think there was a point there where the impressions of the South End, I think when it was emerging over the past few years, was that the South End was a bit detached from the city. In that, you know, people worked wherever, say, Toronto and whatnot, and then would shop, say, in Cambridge. Do you find that's changing? I mean, maybe for yourself it hasn't always been that way, but or was that even ever the way? Was that a false impression that people had in terms of the South End sort of being its own, well, the deep South End sort of had its own, the dividing line, don't cross this line, you're in the South.
Yeah, well, certainly when the Deep South community started, you know, say 15 years ago, or maybe even 20, depending on where you're counting from, the rest of the city had not caught up commercially to where the consumers wanted. And so, yeah, I remember 15 years ago driving out to Cambridge to go to the stores there because we didn't have the same community centers that we have now in Guelph. So a lot of the commercial has caught up. I think the capacity has certainly come online, whether that's people like shopping in a revitalized downtown or in a big box commercial establishment. I think a lot of it has caught up, and so I think people are more willing to stay in the Guelph community because the buildings are now there. The commercial has caught up to what people are looking for.
And a lot of filling in, too, because these things sort of start here and here, and then they kind of reach out to each other. And I was going to say it's almost viral, but that sort of has a negative connotation. But, I mean, it is very much like that. People establish somewhere and it's sort of far away from the center of things, but slowly and surely things start connecting.
Yeah, that's exactly. And certainly the commercial establishment at the Clare Gordon Node is huge. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're looking for banks, there's six of them. If you want restaurants, they have them. They have a movie theater and restaurants and lots of really good things there that people can have walkable communities if you're in that node within, say, a 5 to 10 minute walk where even just 5 years ago, that wasn't necessarily the case.
Well, so Adam and I were down there on our burger tour, and that was insane that night. It was like, I found it hard to believe because, I mean, I remember the driving range, so which I sort of miss. But at the same time, it's like, it's massive and dynamic down there, and you wouldn't believe it until you've actually seen it. So, what do we have?
State Maine.
Yeah, it was very good.
It's good. It was packed, too.
Yep.
I wanted to get to this right away. It's contentious, but I know that people are waiting with bated breath to hear your answer to this. And I'm going to try and read it almost exactly how it was written. This comes from S. Nichols. I don't know if it was a he or a she, but they say...
That's a she.
Oh, is it? Okay. So you are aware of this person.
I know who it is.
Okay. 95% of the Courtright Hills community survey do not, emphasis on the not, want a two-lane bridge to replace the Heritage Niska Road single-lane Bailey Bridge. Yet, you, as long as I think it was a unanimous vote, voted for it. Many of them feel like they weren't listened to. They're not pleased with the decision. And they say, you know, how many would consider voting for you in the next election? And apparently she is quite upset. And it's not, I don't think, a unique sentiment. But I'm curious how you're addressing this, because I remember that night. There was 23 speakers. One was for. But still, the decision didn't go with the majority.
That's right. So it wasn't unanimous. It was a heavy majority vote, but it wasn't unanimous on that.
Yeah.
And that's a great question, and it's something that at any time, an elected representative is going to have these issues. And the difference comes to between listening to constituents and the community and doing what the community wants.
Right.
A lot of communities, constituents are, I would say, very, very singular in their focus because it makes sense. They're constituents. They're not politicians. They're going to be concerned with what happens outside their doorstep often.
Yeah.
And the people in the community made it very clear in that immediate area they did not want a two-lane bridge. That was crystal clear. There's no debating that that was indeed the case.
Right.
No, it's not unanimous, and it might not be 95% because we did hear from a lot of people that talked to us directly, but by far the majority of people did not want that. But as a councillor, whether it's a ward councillor or even an at-large councillor, for example, we have to consider things that go beyond just the immediate community. And we're not here to just do what's popular, but we're here to make the best decisions.
Mm-hmm.
We have professional staff that are engaged on these issues, engineering staff, planners, as well as something like administration staff, and that this is their job. They do this full time. And as a councillor, I know we have to rely very heavily on our staff because I'm not an expert in roads. I'm not an expert in engineering or right. city planning. If you want to sell a house, I can help with that. Or design a board game, I can help with that. Certainly, I do have my expertise. But I rely on a lot of the research that our professional staff does, and they do an excellent job. So with the Nisqually situation, the big push for a while when I first started, even during on the campaign trail, it was keep it a one lane, keep it a one lane. And that was the big push.
Mm-hmm.
And then when engineering came back from the city and said, one lane's not a possibility because it's against road standards. Professionally, we do not recommend this. And
right.
when you're city engineer, you know, the head person that's of that department tells you it's not possible to do a one lane. You better have a really good reason if you're going to go against your professional staff for that.
Right.
So when one lane became taken off the table, it then became a two lane option or close it down.
Right.
And many of us on council, we might have been leaning, we might have thought the one lane was a possibility, whether it's a remediation or repair or replacement or whatnot. But when that kick off the table and it came down to closing it or two lane, then we have a different issue. And again, if you're on Downey or if you're in that exact community, you may look and say, there's no benefits to me to take away from what it is now. I'd rather have it shut down. And I understand that. If you don't use the road, sure, shutting it down would make sense as well. And if you are impacted by what you anticipate the negative impacts of traffic volumes or speed or whatnot, again, shutting it down might have made sense.
Right.
But the engineers and the city planners and so many people we heard from staff said, no, shutting it down is not a recommended option. There's far more problems associated with that. And so when it comes to having a vote, as much as you know, I would love to say, Mr. Voter, I will do exactly what you want me to do because if I run again, I would love to have your vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to make tougher decisions. I'm here to make decisions in the best interest of the entire city, as well as communities, as well as the ward. But in the end, I'm not going to do what's popular when I don't think it's right. And so when the Nisqually decision came down, it was very clear to me Nisqually needed to be a two-lane bridge. What can we do to mitigate some of the problems?
Right.
Well, we'll look at that in the design phase. There may be options to deal with that at that point. But it was very clear shutting it down was not a preferable option. One lane was not an option that staff would recommend. Therefore, the two-lane bridge option was the correct one. So I understand the community concerns. I absolutely listened
mm-hmm.
to many, many emails, many in face-to-face conversations. But listening is not the same as doing what people want because it's what the constituents think is best because there's so many more factors that have to go into to making a political decision like that.
I'm sure you'd like to hear that this is the last you'll hear of it, but I'm pretty sure you won't. But I because, you know, we have timing issues, I'll move on to something else. I did get another listener question, and they're curious about your position on ranked balloting and having multiple member wards because there is a coming forward, the province has opened it up to having ranked ballots. I know the city had to postpone its the ward review, looking at whether we're going to go to full-time, one councillor per ward, or keep the current system as it is. So people are understandably curious about how you might, where you might stand on that.
Absolutely. I was certainly for and was willing to put the money for doing a full ward review,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's the boundaries or the compositions, counselors, number, salaries, full-time, part-time, whatnot. I was willing to do that, put it forth in the budget season, but it was defeated by council.
Mm-hmm.
So the decision of changing our the way we elect our representatives. I don't really have a strong feeling either way. I mean, a lot of people say, well, this system is better or that system is better. The fact is, every system has trade-offs and every system has advantages and disadvantages. And to get A, you have to give up a little bit of B.
Right.
And then everyone will have a different opinion. What's more important, A or B? Mm-hmm. Or is it C? So the idea of what were the options presented to us, it's something that I'm open to listen. I do think that making a decision without some sort of community engagement, whether it's going out to the community and having open houses and asking them, or whether it's doing a referendum during the next election time, which I know some people don't want to wait that long. But in the end, is that the best thing to us to change our way of we electing our councillors? I'm certainly open to different ways of looking at that. The system that I would like to see isn't something that we have the option of. If we're going to make changes, I would have loved the province to say, well, instead of you doing A or B, you can decide as a municipality the best way to elect your representatives using maybe here's 20 different options, and you can choose which one. Because I think there's far better systems than either of those two options that are presented. But if that's not going to happen, if we have A or B, I really think I'm not willing to make a decision at this point until we're going to get more engagement in some form. And whether that's, again, a referendum or just community engagement, I'm not sure at this point. But I don't strongly feel that one system is better than another.
Well, where does representation, you think, fall short then? I mean, in terms of other ideas you were talking about.
Yeah, well, the biggest problem, the drawback against the option of the rank balloting, really, I mean, of course, everyone understands mathematically. It comes down to peoples who have an option of selecting someone that wasn't part of the top one or two.
Right.
They get their second choice considered, where people who are in the one top one or two, maybe number two, don't get their alternate things decision. And I understand that there's a problem with that. If we had a different type of system, there is one that's in a very small community in a country, Nauru, a decimalized border system. And I've done a lot of research on that. It's fascinating. Where, let's just say you have 10 people running in a ward for only two spots. Well, you would rank as many people you want. You'd say first, one, I rank this as number one, this person's number two, this person's number three. And you can rank all 10, or you can rank three, you can rank five, whatever you're comfortable ranking. Mm. And then what they'd look at is the person who came in was your first choice, they would get 1/1 points or 1 point. If you ranked someone second, they'd get 1/2 points or 0.5 point or 1/3 points for third place. Mm-hmm. So what it does, you would eventually just add up everyone's points that you'd have. And it's a system, because it's decimalized, it makes people, the difference between 1 and 2, first place and second place, is huge. It's a point versus a 0.5 point. But the difference between 9th place and 10th place, 1/9 or 1/10, it's very, very small on the other end. So mm-hmm. I would have loved to have seen that system. I think it solves the most number of troubles. It gives the best form of representation. But in the end, it's not an option. So with the options presented, what we have right now, I don't have a preference. I don't see a reason to change what we have, but I don't see the reason not to change what we have either.
Mm. Sounds like there's some board game potential there with that system. Just the way it was described there, I was like, I can see that happening.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, the game
Settlers
designer
of Nauru or something.
Yeah, the game designer in me likes those numbers and likes the challenges of those types of systems, certainly. But it's not on the table, so we have to go what we work with. I'm looking forward to reports from, once again, professional staff. Our clerk's department is going to give us some good recommendation, and then we'll go from there.
Well, speaking as someone who is up late covering election results, I think we'd end up being here even later if we're having
all nighters.
If we're having to get out the scientific calculators. But this one isn't ward centric at all. But this person was curious about what has to go right for there to be a new downtown library in the next decade. I think there was maybe a bit of a sharp tongue in that one. But I remember covering what happened in Upper Wyndham, and that was 2008 when Ray closed up the old thrift shop there, and Wyndham Arts moved across the road. It's been almost 10 years since it seemed like there was progress forward on that.
It has been a while, and it's been on the books for 20, similar to the South End Rec Center. Certainly, it's a big capital project that's been on the books for a long time, but never advanced. A lot of it comes down to funding and other priorities. And so how do we get the library built? Well, there has to be a strong business case that the majority of council can get behind. And that sounds simple. However, when you have many different opinions of what a strong business case is, then it's difficult. The biggest problem we have is that I believe is the best site that was identified, Baker Street, as the alternative, and many other places were looked and rejected. So if Baker Street is the best, but Baker Street is also a single time, one single uniform plan, mm-hmm. and you can't do it in piecemeal. So the plan that was put forward even just before the election about having Conestoga College and the YMCA and Innovation Guelph and a couple of other places, well, Conestoga College, not available. Yeah. They were told they don't get the funding for that. So if we want to comprehensively build Baker Street correctly and do it once, you can't independently build a library. Right. It has to be part of a larger package. So if you either need to advance the whole project forward, which council may be considering doing with putting it into the capital forecast and then having staff do work on it, and advancing the whole project forward, which is some problems, or you have to look at an alternate for the library, which people say they don't want. Certainly could be downtown. It could, there's a number of different options on it. How does it get there? There has to be an understanding that large capital project costs money. Yeah. They cost time from staff, as well as it has to be a strong business case that a majority can get behind. And to get seven people on council behind a strong library business case, given the diversity of views that we have, is not going to be easy. We can get it onto a capital forecast, and I think it might happen, and getting it on to the 10-year forecast. That doesn't mean that it's going to be built in 10 years, but at least puts it on the radar and gives us a chance to seriously look at it. It's not on the capital forecast right now. Mm-hmm. If we put it on, it becomes a priority. I know it's a priority for many people on council to get one built, but how that's exactly going to happen remains up in the air. So mm-hmm. it's a great question.
Yeah, and I recognize it's one with no easy answer too. But it is something that's always in the back of people's heads, and especially since a lot of regular library users know that the current main branch is, if it's not at capacity, it's actually probably breaking capacity. It's probably perhaps outgrown what it needs to be. When was that built? It's the 60s, I think.
It's quite a while ago. And I have no doubt that the library currently, in its current form, in its current usage, is not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, there's other things that are currently not appropriate as well, like our situation of our rec facilities.
Right.
It is not appropriate what we have now. It is not up to standards. So are we going to make some adjustments there? Are we going to make adjustments with the library? These are all great questions. They all cost money and time. And I know that council is looking forward to tackling them. But in the end, there's different priorities.
I wanted to talk about one of those priorities because you were pushing pretty hard at budget time for the service review. I know it didn't happen this year. So, you know, we're going into, I mean, there's going to be a break for you on council in the month of August. But, I mean, after that, it's going to be like right into the budget time. So how hard are you going to be pushing for that service review come budget deliberations? And do you think it's going to happen this year?
Yeah, well, I was extremely disappointed that it got pulled because I really thought it was vital for us to move forward in understanding the rationalization of everything we do. But that said, there's been some recent developments that have happened in the past few months about staff undertaking a service review within the confines of what they do
right.
as part of their normal business. And it won't be as aggressive and it won't be as intense as a rationalization that would have cost $400,000 to go without outside consulting. But it's something that I believe that they're going to tackle. And the service reviews, if we do three or four or five different departments a year and it's internal and maybe it costs less because maybe they have to go a little bit outside to get consulting, but not the $400,000 package. So I'm very optimistic that we're moving in the right direction, even though it's not quite as aggressive as I think we would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if it's a dead issue, and I don't think we're going to necessarily see service rationalizations come back for the 2017 budget at another $400,000 because they're looking at changing how they approach the rationalization, which is our no reviews as opposed to our rationalization. But you know, they're almost synonyms.
Yeah, and I think there is a lot of concern out there that the city know where sort of the leaks are, and that, you know, when you're talking about city planning, we're talking about large sums of money people aren't accustomed to dealing with. And there's that disconnect that people want stuff to happen right now. People can't understand why you go over a budget by a couple of thousand here, a couple of thousand there. So I'm wondering, what do you say to people who are concerned that council isn't spending their money wisely? Because you sit in the council meetings and you hear you guys talk, and that seems very top of mind for just about every councillor. But there's this this thing that you guys just love rubber stamping things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I understand the concern. Certainly there's a strong belief among some constituents that government is very good at wasting money and not putting things in the correct priority and is too slow. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those answers say, yeah, in some ways you're right. I mean, certainly there are things we can do better, but it is government. I've having grown up on a military base, seeing all forms of government, and yeah, there's a lot of inefficiencies in government. But that's not to say there's not inefficiencies in the corporate America or corporate Canada as well. But when it comes down to, are we approving too much? Are we moving forward too quickly? Really, it comes down to the will of council. And every councillor has a different kind of push, a different ideology that they're looking for. And there's no one that's better than another. Mm-hmm. And in the end, how do we not waste money as well? We come to consensus, we listen to constituents, and then we do what's best that we think for the city.
And we hope you keep doing what's best. Because that's what they elected you for. I'm not sure how to end that because we are out of time, unfortunately. Mark, if people want to get in touch with you, how can people do that?
Sure. Best way is through email if they want to reach me directly, mark.mckinnon@guelph.ca. You can also go to my website. It's ward6guelph.ca or follow me on Twitter at ward6mark.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. We appreciate your time, even though it is getting into the lazy, hazy days of summer. But enjoy your break, by the way.
Thanks.
Don't talk.
Thank you. I'm looking forward. I'm going to be heading down to a municipal conference in August down in Windsor. So it's not fully time off. We will be doing work. But no, thanks so much for having me on the show, guys. I really appreciate coming here and talking.
And once again, that was Ward 6 Councillor Mark McKinnon. You can reach him at 519-822-1260, extension 2296. Or by email at mark.mckinnon@guelph.ca. You can also follow him on Twitter at ward6mark and read his blog at ward6guelph.com. And that's it for this edition of Open Sources Guelph Beat. Remember, you can listen to Open Sources Guelph live every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. But if you should happen to miss it, you can download the podcast version every Monday. The host for Open Sources Guelph is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to the Guelph Politicast. You can interact with Open Sources Guelph through our website at opensourcesguelph.com, on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can connect with Scotty at Scotty Hertz on Facebook and Twitter, and read his personal blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com, reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson, or go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page that you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. For all the latest political news, please check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, and remember that the Guelph Politicast will be here with a new episode for you on Friday, and until then, we'll see you next time.